If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about attachment styles. What are they? How can they affect your relationships? And we're also going to talk about ways to remedy possible attachment styles and how to do that within the multiple relationships in your life. So I am Emily.
I'm Dedeker.
And we're coming at you from Bulgaria!
Without Jace.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Whatever, Jace. I know, it is sad, actually. I miss him.
Just in case you guys haven't noticed, Jace has not had a week off of this podcast since its creation.
So that's 80 different podcasts.
Yeah, he's been on, like, every single podcast every single week since our inception.
Yeah, and the two of us have had a lot of weeks off.
We've had many weeks off.
The two of us, yeah.
So we decided to give him a little bit of a break. I mean, he's still going to put in all his work and effort that he normally does of editing it and producing it and getting it all nice and shiny for you guys. But in the meantime, you're stuck with just the two of us ladies.
Yeah, it's a ladies' day.
It's the ladies' day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how do we start talking about attachment in the first place?
Well, you were the one who kind of brought it to me and were like, oh, this is an interesting thing. Have you heard about attachment styles?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm relatively new to this as well. So attachment styles first became a thing actually with studies that were done in the late 50s, early 60s, where they studied attachment styles in children. Yeah, and it was studying, like, you know, if you have a baby or a toddler and, like, mom leaves the room and then comes back, like, how does the child react?
Yeah.
You know, is the child, like, happy that mom comes back? Is the child upset and, like, tries to avoid mom? Or is this child freak out as soon as mom steps out of the room?
Yeah.
That they were trying to look at, like, how is it that children attach kind of to their primary caregiver.
So are they saying that attachment styles, it's not like a nurture versus nature thing? Or is a baby just, like, born with that and that's it?
I don't know. It seems from what I've been reading that it is based on, like, how the parents do treat the child.
Sure. That, like, so that's more of a nurture.
Yeah, that, like, if the parents are very attentive to a baby's needs and, like, anytime the baby has a need, the parent is there on top of it.
Sure.
That the child will grow up with a more secure attachment style.
Yeah.
Because they know, like, okay, like, if I need anything, like, mom or dad's there, and that's good.
Yeah, or my partner or whomever in later years.
Yeah, so that's the thing is that, like, these are things that are developed in your early childhood, but then they tend to kind of evolve and translate also when you become an adult.
Yeah.
And they didn't start studying attachment theory in adults, I think, until, like, the 80s
Interesting.
Or so. Yeah, it's a relatively recent thing.
Yeah, because honestly, I'd never heard of it before you brought it to me, but then I realized, yeah, this is definitely a thing, and we're going to go more into it for sure.
Yeah, and so the interesting thing with attachment theory is that it's not necessarily talking about, like, the way that you attach in your relationships, like, just all the time. Specifically, it's looking at this particular facet of how you respond within your relationships when you're hurt, when you're separated, or when you're perceiving a threat to that relationship.
So something, kind of has to happen in order for this attachment theory
to come
out. Yeah,
like, when things are under pressure, how do you react?
Interesting.
And, of course, you know, and these are looking at different relationships, not just romantic relationships, but your relationship with your dad, or with your mom, or with your friends in particular. And so why is this important to know about if you're in a poly relationship?
Sure. I mean, it's good to know because when you're engaging in multiple relationships, it kind of can show you, like, how you handle jealousy or anything in a particular situation, any conflict that might arise. And also, you can definitely have a different attachment style with each different relationship that you're in. Maybe you're super secure in one, but then the other one, for whatever reason, you have a fear of abandonment or something within that relationship.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because of the fact that, like, if you're going to be in a polyamorous or a non-monogamous relationship, that requires that you're separated from your loved one at some point.
Like what you're going through currently?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It requires, like, that, you know, you're going to go out on a date with someone else.
Sure.
Or your partner's going to go out on a date with someone else.
Yes.
Or spend the night with someone else.
Yeah.
Or, like, have just a whole other separate relationship with someone else. And so it requires that kind of pressure of, hey, there's separation.
On a consistent basis.
Yeah, and so it's, well, how do you react to that separation?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's probably a very different thing in a monogamous relationship. I mean,
yeah.
It can still come up,
yeah,
but it's probably very specific to that relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's it, yeah.
So, let's see, is there anything else here? Yeah, we mentioned the fact that it is, like, possible to hold different attachment styles for your mom or your dad or your friends, but also within multiple partners.
Yes.
You can feel particularly secure in one and more anxious in the other.
Exactly.
So, in adults, they've categorized four broad attachment styles.
Yeah.
And essentially, basically, to look at it even broader, it's kind of like one of them is secure and then the other three are like
insecure,
yeah. Attachment issues,
yeah, insecure within a kind of different facets of that insecurity.
Yeah. So secure attachment is pretty straightforward.
Your securely attached adults tend to have a positive view of themselves and their partners and their relationships. They end up feeling comfortable with intimacy and independence, and they balance the two very well and equally.
Yeah, so I don't know, it's hard for me to talk about the secure attachment style because it's like, well, this person is just perfect.
I know, and it's like, I guess there definitely are people out there who are very secure within their relationship. Like, even if I think back to a good mother-father figure that I knew, my best friend growing up, he has a very, like, wonderful, loving mother and father. And I feel like the two of them must be very secure within their partnership just because of time and because of what they've shown each other with their emotional intimacy.
I guess, I mean, yeah, when I think about that, Emily and I both took a quiz specifically trying to figure out what your attachment style is, which
we'll talk about that later.
But, you know, my relationship with my mom specifically is very secure attachment.
Mine as well, yeah.
You know, and not to say that that's like a perfect relationship,
sure.
But as in, like, there's no fears that she's not going to be there for me. There's no fears that she's not going to have emotional support. There's no fears that I can't depend on this person. There's no fears of abandonment.
Like, yeah.
So it's a very secure relationship. That's not how everybody feels about their mom.
No, I mean, yeah, I definitely know people who are, like, they never go to their mother for advice. They end up, like, being more of the person who gives advice to their mother.
Yeah.
And then also, there are people out there, like, even Josh, my boyfriend, like, doesn't talk to his family that often.
Mm-hmm.
So he may, like, definitely be very close with his family, but he only talks to them, like, once a month or his mother once a month. So that may be still secure, but it's not like you and me who tend to, like, go to our moms for a lot
for
of
more,
stuff.
For more than that, for sure.
So
that's a secure one, and and it's funny because they were talking about how, like, babies and toddlers will grow up more secure, like, if their parents are more, like, attentive to their needs. And so I was questioning that. I was thinking, like, well, what parent is, like, not attentive to their needs?
I mean,
provided they're not, like, a neglectful, like, horrible parent, you know? But they pointed out the fact that, like, if the baby perceives that, like, I asked for something or, like, I cried, you know, like, I demonstrated that I had a need, and there was resistance to that from my parents, like, either they told me no or they ignored it, that, or even if they unintentionally ignored it, you know, like, if the baby's just crying for, like, a minute too long or 30 seconds too long while mom's trying to take care of something, but the baby interprets that as, like, oh, my needs aren't getting met, that even that is enough to, like, not, to kind of limit how much the child is going to grow up with a secure attachment to their parents.
Wow, that's, like, very Freudian to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is very Freudian, and it seems very fragile.
Sure. Well, and also that's interesting because, like, when does conscious perception start within a child? Like, when does someone say, or when does a kid, like, start realizing and understanding, like, okay, I'm not getting my needs met right now? And how does that translate to later in life? Like, is a kid cognitively developed enough as a baby in order to, like, make these things,
well, I don't know,
last in their life?
I mean, if there's any listeners who are child psychologists,
please
let us know.
Because
I know that when you're, like, you're first born, like, you're just, like, a little grub.
Exactly.
Of just,
like,
needs.
Little spawn, yeah.
And then, but until you're about the age of, like, one or two, you still think that you're, like, the same entity as your parents. Like, you don't understand that, like, you have separate thoughts from your parents. But you can still get those impressions of, like, mom's meeting my needs or mom's not meeting my needs.
Yeah, I guess you can. But then you start having, like, memories and thoughts, like, at a specific age.
Yeah, but then, like, around 2 or 3, that's when you start to realize, like, oh, I am separate from my parents. Like, that's the first time you're able to, like, lie, for instance, when you realize, like, oh, what's going on in my brain is something that's separate from, like, what mom and dad can
and
hear.
And test your boundaries and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
interesting. That was a child psychology tangent.
Sorry, yeah. If anyone has more to say on that, let us know.
Yeah, please educate us, because we don't know nothing about babies.
Exactly. No, not yet.
So the next style is anxious preoccupied, and this can be summed up, somebody summed this up with a phrase, and the phrase being, like, I want to be emotionally intimate with people, but they don't want to be with me, or I'm afraid that they don't want to be with me.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, like, anxious preoccupied adults will definitely, sometimes they're labeled as very needy.
Mm-hmm.
They will seek a lot of intimacy, they'll seek approval, they'll seek responsiveness or communication from partners, and sometimes they may even become, like, too dependent on their partners or codependent.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these are the people who also tend to be a little bit less trusting. They have less positive views about themselves and their partners, and they may exhibit high levels of emotional expressiveness. So, kind of the spewers, potentially.
Yeah.
And then worry and be impulsive in their relationships. Mm-hmm. And they also have, that fear of a partner leaving them.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing, is because, like, on other episodes when we've talked about jealousy, for instance, we've talked about the fact that jealousy is so frequently based in this fear of, like, losing somebody, a fear of losing a partner.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I would theorize that the people who experience the highest levels of jealousy are more likely to be anxious preoccupied.
Interesting.
I think there's more likely to be this sense of, like, my partner's going to leave me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to lose this person that I have. And so they're kind of more, that's why it's called preoccupied, is because they're preoccupied with a sense of, like, maybe my partner secretly doesn't want to be with me.
Yeah.
And, like, as soon as they get an opportunity to find someone better, then they're going to take off.
Sure. Yeah. And, I mean, I've definitely experienced this in a lot of times in my life. And, and again, it is partner to partner, because I've had partners where I'm like, I'm so secure with you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's no way that we're going to, you know, leave each other for whatever reason. So that's not a thing that I'm worried about. But then I've had partners where I'm like, fuck, like, this person could definitely leave me, and I'm anxious about it all the time.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, because I do feel like, just because you experience jealousy, it doesn't mean that, like, you are anxious preoccupied in your attachment style. I think, honestly, with all of these attachment styles, it is possible to feel jealousy.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a matter of how you react to it, right?
Sure, and if you let it run your life and in your relationship life.
Yeah. Or maybe how frequently it comes up.
Yeah. And maybe also how much it, how good or not good you are at kind of taking that and then using it to your advantage, or, like, helping it along or being better at it. Yeah.
So I would theorize, like, people who have a more secure attachment style, like, maybe you'll still experience jealousy, but maybe it might be just less often that it comes up.
Maybe.
Or maybe you do experience jealousy. It's just that you have a better handle of, like, of letting it pass quicker. Like, it passes quicker for you because you're able to be like, well, but it's okay. Like, I feel secure. And things are okay. So I don't think that, like, you know, just because you have a secure attachment style means that you're going to be immune to, like, ever feeling threatened or ever feeling jealous.
No. But if you do, it's if you let it run kind of your life and not think about it and not be more, I don't know, preoccupied with yourself and figuring it out.
Yeah.
Why am I doing these things?
I was definitely more anxious preoccupied when I was younger, I think.
Sure. I guess that makes sense. I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like in my first relationship, I learned about jealousy and became more jealous because my partner really was.
Oh,
he would always be like, where are you going?
Mm.
I saw your car here. Why was it there?
Yeah. And, like, okay. Yeah. That's a big thing, actually, that I was reading about the anxious preoccupied attachment style.
Sure.
It's like separation is a big issue.
Separation.
Like physical separation.
Interesting.
Tends to be more of an issue where it's like, if my partner's gone, like, I'm very anxious about,
because I don't know where they are.
I don't know where they are. Huh. I don't know if they're going to meet someone more awesome than me.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
That's definitely a big issue.
Interesting.
Yeah.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMail.com and Eve'sToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences.
And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Okay, back to it. What's the next attachment style?
So dismissive avoidance, in a way that they described this was, I'd rather not depend on others or have others depend on me. And then these dismissive avoidant adults, they desire a high level of independence. They often appear to avoid attachment altogether. They view themselves as highly self-sufficient, and they're invulnerable to attachment feelings, and they don't really need close relationships in their life.
So this is the dismissive avoidant. I'd actually say there was a good 3 or 4 years of my life where this was totally me.
Yeah, I remember you saying something about that,
for
sure.
Yeah, it was totally like I just kept everyone at arm's length. Uh-huh. Like, I didn't want anyone to get close. I didn't want to get close to anybody else. You know, I just, like, did not want anybody getting close to me.
Interesting.
And the funny thing is that, like, you know, whenever people talk about another person having a fear of intimacy,
sure,
it tends to be something like this, of being dismissive avoidant.
Yeah.
And some people actually look at polyamory or look at multi-partner relationships and label it as that. They say, like, well, you're just avoiding intimacy.
Sure. Or you haven't found the one yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are usually people who, like, don't realize that this is actually, like, meaningful or, like, deep relationships.
Yeah.
You know, if they see someone who has multiple partners, they assume, well, they all must be, like, surface-level relationships.
Yes.
This must be,
or
like,
just sex or something.
Yeah. This must be, like, avoiding commitment or avoiding intimacy or avoiding love. Yeah. And so there's definitely have been theories that polyamorous people tend to be more avoidant.
Yeah.
We'll actually address that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's definitely
not the
case.
Have you ever been with someone like that or ever experienced
this kind
of attachment?
That's a good question. I think it's so because I do appreciate and really like to be around people who are, like, highly emotional often, I tend to not have people in my life who are that dismissive. Yeah, I think that I probably wouldn't deal with that very well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I have, like, had partners who ultimately are just like, sorry, I'm not interested in this because I don't want something as deep as what you're asking me for.
Mm-hmm.
That happened more in college. I think, you know, younger people in college, they are sort
of... It's like, I don't want a relationship right
now.
Yeah,
and they're figuring out their independence and stuff, and they don't want, like, a deep, really emotional thing. But, and it's like, I don't know, the players of,
when you're
in your young 20s.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been with people who are like this?
I'm trying to think. I mean, because usually, like, if I'm ever in a relationship where this has come up, like, I've been the one who's brought up, like, the avoidant, like, aspect to it.
What do you think the reasoning behind that was? Was it because you were trying to, like, save yourself from that emotional attachment, or
don't know. Honestly,
valued your independence.
This is kind of a good lead-in to the next one,
sure.
Because where I think that I've tended to live most of my life is the next attachment style, which is fearful avoidant.
Yeah,
and the fearful avoidant, the phrase for them is, "I want to be close, but what if I get hurt?" And so I feel like for most of my adult relationships, it's been a mix of, like, either fearful avoidant or dismissive avoidant.
Interesting.
So, like, the fearful avoidant person, they have mixed feelings about close relationships because they both, like, really want to be emotionally close, but they also feel uncomfortable with that closeness.
Interesting.
They have a tendency to mistrust their partners and also to view themselves as unworthy.
Huh.
And now, when I read that, that totally resonated.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Like, because I feel like, in my past, in relationships where I've been not as like attracted or not as drawn to the other person, it's been more dismissive avoidant.
Okay.
But in relationships where I've been very drawn to that person or very attracted to them, it's been more fearful avoidant.
Interesting.
In the sense of feeling
like,
unworthy.
Am I not worthy? Yeah.
Yes, a feeling like I really like this person, but I feel like I'm not worthy of them. And so I'm going to kind of pull back a little bit.
Wow.
Because I don't want to get hurt.
Yeah. That's yeah. very interesting.
It's real messed up, but.
Well, I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of doing something like different than how I go. I'd usually
yeah.
like jump in
uh-huh.
all the way and then do get hurt or have gotten hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's understandable that you would want to not be hurt by someone.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, that's been more where I've kind of lived.
Where
and
do you think the turning point happened? Because I wouldn't characterize that as
there was
you
a very
now.
Specific turning point.
Oh, okay.
That happened like 3-ish years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a combination of factors. One of those factors was actually watching Brené Brown's TED Talk on vulnerability.
Oh, that's cool.
Have you watched it?
No.
Oh, it was freaking amazing.
Wow.
Like, that helped turn me around. And then I don't know, like I just came to this realization, that like the only like because I realized like that I do want to be close.
Yeah,
like that was
of
the
course.
Big thing. It was like, oh, I actually do seek like emotional relationships. I do
yeah.
seek emotional fulfillment. Like I do want this, but I had to realize that like I'm not going to get that if
unless,
I'm constantly pulling back.
Yes,
I'm not going to get that if I'm constantly trying to close myself. Like
yeah.
I have to open myself up.
Yeah, and be vulnerable. To
exactly.
That.
If
sure.
I'm going to get what I want.
Yeah.
Like, that was a major turning point. And it's not that everything became perfect after that point.
Sure.
But that definitely was, I think, the beginning of me being able to actually get close to, like, secure attachment
yes.
in relationships.
Okay.
Of being able to open myself up and, like, actually give of myself and
that's
actually,
really cool.
like, express my feelings and
yeah.
be affectionate to people. Around that same time, like, my entire life, I wasn't a very cuddly or, like, touch-based
yeah,
person.
Yeah, yes.
And, like, at that same time, suddenly I was like, oh, it is okay to, like, touch people.
Yeah.
It is okay to, like, outwardly express my affection or my feelings for someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, thank God there was that turning point.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that that's been, like, necessary for me to have success, particularly in polyamorous relationships.
Of course. Yeah,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Because
yeah.
you have to be vulnerable to
yeah.
to put yourself out there enough to be with multiple people.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a very vulnerable situation in which
sure.
to put oneself.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I want to go back. We mentioned the fact that like a lot of people kind of accuse polyamorists of just being avoidant.
Yes.
You know, like you have multiple partners because you're too afraid of like getting close to one partner.
Yeah.
And so you're just avoidant attached. And I was really surprised that in 2014 there actually was a study done on this.
I know, that's super cool.
Like there are so few studies
and
done on like non-monogamy.
Yeah, and there were a lot of participants.
Yeah, so there
thousands
were two studies.
Of, yes, yeah? In fact, that's lovely.
Yeah. And so in the first study, it was done via a survey, I
yes.
think, about attachment styles and things like that. And so in the first study, the results showed that that people who approved of polyamory, and this was of, in the first study, it was all people who were monogamous,
okay.
like heterosexual
yeah.
monogamous. But they found that the people who did approve of polyamory, they were more likely to have the avoidant attachment style
yes.
that we talked about.
Okay.
And they were less likely to be anxious attached.
Interesting. Yeah.
Which makes sense. However, in the second study...
And these were all heterosexual monogamous people who did this study.
Well, the majority of the second study were monogamous, but then a small percentage, or like
no,
the minority, were
okay.
in a non-monogamous relationship.
I see. Yeah, but the first study was all heterosexual monogamous
yeah.
people.
But so the second study found that the people who were in the non-monogamous relationship, they had actually lower levels of avoidance.
Okay.
They had higher levels of trust, and they
yes.
had lower levels of jealousy.
That's cool.
And so it's actually just kind of cool. There's a specific quote in the results of the study that they concluded that the findings of the study provide important new evidence that people can exhibit aspects of security
yes.
without sexual exclusivity.
Interesting.
And
yeah,
that's something
cool.
that I come back to all the time of like asking people, well, what are the things that you do to create safety and create commitment and create dedication in your relationships outside of just sexual exclusivity?
Sure.
Because it's so much bigger than just that.
Absolutely.
You know, as anyone in a monogamous relationship can tell you, you know, just because you're the only person that they're fucking doesn't mean that, like,
yeah.
you feel great all the time or
no,
secure all
absolutely.
The time.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the question is, like, what exactly makes a person secure in a relationship? Is it communication? Is
yeah.
it going to be, like, I know that this person is always there for me emotionally, and I know that if I need something from them, they'll be there for me. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are people out there who are a bit flippant and who maybe don't want to be there for you, and I guess that can kind of breed more anxious attachment, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, I do think that if you are interested in being polyamorous or if you are interested in being non-monogamous, it's probably going to go better for you. Well, obviously, it's going to go better for you if you're secure.
Yes.
That's, like, for any relationship.
Of course.
But it's probably going to be easier for someone who is more on the avoidant side rather than on the anxious side.
Sure, yeah.
As in, like, someone who tends to err more on the side of being too independent rather than someone who tends to err on the side of being too dependent.
Sure.
I think. I don't know. What do you think about
that? I get that. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always good, in my opinion, to try to not have codependency in your relationships. That's, I think, something that everyone has to work on at one time or another. Because, the nature of relationships sometimes is like, well, you're fulfilling my needs. And so that's a codependent, like, idea in and of itself. And if you can be independent of that and just allow, like, yourself and your partner their autonomy, then you're able to not have to have that codependency in your life, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we took this uncomfortable quiz about attachment styles.
Yeah.
What were yours?
That's a good question. Why don't you go over yours
first? Yeah, let me see. So my results... So yeah, as I kind of predicted, my general attachment style tends to be the fearful avoidant. With my mom, tends to be secure.
Yes.
With my father, fearful avoidant, although that was a hard one because, like, I've had multiple father figures in my life, and so it was hard to, like, answer the questions appropriately.
Exactly.
And it said, with romantic, preoccupied. And it's interesting because this quiz in particular, obviously it's built around you having one partner.
Yeah.
Because something that I think we've both experienced is that you can have different attachment styles in different romantic relationships.
Yeah.
You know, and also at different times in different romantic relationships.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You could be feeling totally secure and then suddenly feel avoidant or very anxious and then go back to feeling secure. Or you could be feeling secure in one relationship and then totally anxious and preoccupied in another one.
In mine, so my general attachment style is preoccupied, which I found really interesting. Yes, anxious, preoccupied. And then again, with my mother, very secure. With my father, who has been not really a figure at all in my life, it's been fearful, avoidant. And then romantic was preoccupied, which is interesting. And again, like, this is with my main, I guess I would say, primary partner.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by that because I thought that it would be anxious attachment or anxious preoccupied, but it was just more preoccupied is what they said. So, and then in my friendships, depending on who it is, I think I have some very secure friendships. And then others, I have more preoccupied friendships, depending on that one.
So I think... And like I said, we'll include a link to this quiz. Again, the quiz isn't perfect, but it can still be very illuminating to kind of figure out what space you live in.
Yeah, it's a long quiz, which I think is cool. It definitely goes into quite a few different aspects of your life.
And I think, I guess the ultimate takeaway I would want our listeners to have from this is something that I've been saying, like, ad nauseum, is just that, like, self-awareness is, like, the most powerful tool you have in the box.
Absolutely.
When it comes to relationships.
Yes.
Like, if you know yourself, like, if you're aware of the fact, like, oh, you know, I was raised in a situation where I had this very anxious attachment, like, to my father, for instance.
Yeah.
And then I've brought that to my relationships as well, that if you're aware of that, that's the first step for being able to get in front of it, rather than letting that just run the show.
Yes.
And, I mean, this is something like the fearful avoidant thing. I mean, I only, like, learned about this just a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, my God.
You're like, that's so what I've done.
For so many things. Like, I so wish I'd known that earlier so that I can know, like, oh, this is why I do this.
Yes.
And so then I can actively make the choice to not do it.
Yeah, again, it's a lot of, you know, going back and looking at yourself and trying to figure out, like, what are the reasons behind this? How can I change those? Just trying to get behind it and figure out what you can do to prevent it or to just make everything better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, with self-awareness, because, like, polyamory, I think when it's going well, it's actually quite easy.
I find,
when everyone's on board and everyone's communicating, then it's quite easy.
Sure.
It's more about, like, how do you react when the pressure is on? Like, how do you react when something goes wrong? How do you react when something that you didn't expect crops up? Because that's when the wild card gets into the mix.
The change or...
Yeah, exactly. And so knowing just kind of where you operate can really help you to not be as thrown off by unexpected things or by uncomfortable things.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. Well, is that it?
I think so.
We made it through an episode without Jace.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, again, sorry, Jace, you're going to have to edit this.
Oh, God, is it time for a spinoff show?
Now
we've proven our independence.
There you go.
Are we
going
to be avoidant attached to Jace?
Yeah, we're the feminist polyamory show or something. Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope that this was helpful for you. Again, if there's a child psychologist out there who wants to educate us
on child development and attachment, please
reach out to us. If you have any questions, any comments, any feedback for us, you can find us. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. You can tweet at us on Twitter @multiamory. You can find us at Facebook/multiamory. And also, last but not least, patreon.com/multiamory. Thank you so much, you guys.
Goodbye from Bulgaria.
Goodbye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.